This is going to be episode 49 of the Brilliant Podcast. We just put up episode 46, I think. So it's going to be a week or two before this is posted up live. But obviously, what we're talking about was felt very important a week ago. And now a week later feels a little less important. But clearly, I think a lot of people care about this topic, or at least care about the conversation. Obviously, both of us were sort of called out, but I wasn't called out by name, just my projects were called out. You were called out about 10 days ago from IGD and this person named Scott Campbell, I think their name is, Scott something. Mm-hmm. And more or less what the purpose of their article was to disassociate social anarchism from ITS and from even considering ITS to be something worth talking about or thinking about. And I guess my first question, well, actually, you know what? I think I'd rather not talk about that article to start out with. I'd rather talk a little bit about your pedigree, because you actually came to the eco-extremist position not really from anarchism, but from a sort of ultra-left Marxist position. Is that true?
Well, this is where all the legal distinctions come in involved.
Yeah,
I don't feel I could call myself an eco-extremist.
Sure,
obviously,
sure.
People will be like, who, you know, don't like me, who there are quite a few now, would go, ha, 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 you're just, you know, splitting hairs legally. But I think just the nature of what eco-extremism is very much a practice-oriented sort of thing.
Mm.
And obviously, I'm not doing that, because if I did, the FBI would have broken down my door already.
Sure.
So that's sort of the caveat you always have to put out with these things. And all the same, people will come up and say, well, you know, they're going to do it one of these days, you'll see. And it's like, well, you know, everything has its risks, right? So we try and minimize those. So after that splitting hairs, how did I come to sympathize with them? Yeah, I mean, how far do you want to go back? Because I could go back, my formation was basically when I was I could write sort of confessions of a young Trotskyist sort of thing, because I had become a Trotskyist when I was 16.
Oh.
And I had been to Berkeley, and then I had a spiritual crisis, so I was in the desert for a bit, almost literally, actually. I was, I studied for the priesthood. I grew up Catholic, but that's a whole other story. And then I was in a monastery for a couple of years, and then I got married and returned to normal life. And then after that occurred, you know, after my kids started being born, then I started to return more to political thinking, but not, you know, not in the practical sense, because, you know, in the practical sense, I could barely tie my shoes at that point, because, you know, we have young children and a job and so on and so forth. So I started, but yeah, at the point that I encountered anarcho-primitivism or like radical anti-civilization thought, I was a Marxist. Because when I returned to political thinking, from religious thinking, if you will, or philosophical thinking, you know, I sort of took up where I left off, and I was like, okay, well, I need to return to all these themes that as a young man I had visited. And so I just wandered sort of in the desert for a few years into Marxism, and then, you know, I encountered, you know, anti-civilization thought, like Derek Jensen and Gary Schneider and Don Zurzen and stuff. So after a few years of that, I started, you know, listening to John Zurzen's show, ironically, since he hates me now, but, you know, I heard of these people in Mexico, being of Mexican extraction and knowing Spanish, my fear perked up. So I Googled it and I read the communiques. I read the first series of communiques in 2011,
mm-hmm.
which are very Kaczynski-esque.
Yeah.
And I was very like, oh, okay, because it went off on, I mean, it was sort of really tinfoil hat stuff. And people will laugh at that now because they're like, oh, well, you know, you're basically, you know, an apologist for a psychopath. But I mean, the 2011 stuff was, and I have to give props to Free Radical Radio, because they are doing recordings of those again, even though on the Ether Extremist website, Maldición Eco Extremista, it was so funny because after a couple of days after they started doing those, they did the recording one and two, they did this like, it must have been like a 7 or 8 paragraph, like a preamble, like, we're going to repost this link, but just so you know, this is how we've evolved. So it was a huge, like, fine print sort of thing. Huh. But I was reading that, and they sort of, for me, they sort of were very tinfoil hat, oh, nanotechnology is going to create robots and swallow the world, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm like, oh, that's nice. So I sort of just kept going, you know, with my typical other sort of reading and writing. At that point. And then it was only at the point that they became Wild Reaction, which people know as Wild Reaction, which is August 2014, that really perked my ears, because then they started to go off in another direction, with the sort of historical, the historical allusions to what happened in ancient Mesoamerica and the conquest and the war against civilization that occurred there over the period of about half a century. So that was interesting, and that's what led to my article on Towards Savagery.
It seemed like just yesterday when Stephen Colbert told America,
which really started the ball rolling on that. And there was a website at that time that was putting out a lot of interesting primary sources and a lot of, you know, it was clear that something was going on. Like there was something, you know, from just being Kaczynski, you know, green anarchist, very eclectic, you know, citing Stirner, everyone from Stirner to Ayn Rand, that they were sort of starting to settle into something that hadn't been really done before, if you will.
Hmm.
So that, I mean, that's sort of that. I mean, where Marxism fits in that. I mean, yeah, I've actually never considered myself an anarchist. I mean, even when I was interested in anarcho-primitivism and I sort of, you know, sort of called myself an anarcho-primitivism, I was like, I'm not sure about the anarcho part, because I just don't. Because, I mean, I was at Berkeley, you know, when I was a Trotskyist, and I just remember what the anarchists were, and I just didn't associate with that, you know. Well, you know, I was very much
tell me more about that. Tell me more about that. What period was that, and what anarchists were you, did you interact with?
I didn't really interact with anybody. I mean, I had some food, not bomb, stale bagels at some demonstrations when I was 16, you know. You know, I didn't really, I guess I was in the student activist scene, and I was in, you know, in that sort of thing. Well, I guess I'll just reveal, I mean, I was in BAM, you know that?
Oh,
and,
really?
I was like the very early stage of BAM. Like, practically at its foundation, I was there. I don't know. I feel bad about saying this, but let's just say that a lot of them are Trotskyists.
Okay, sure.
If you will. So I was in that thing. So that was my real, you know, that was my only real bubble, if you will. So I didn't really have any other, you know, interactions with, you know, the only people I would, only other sort of, trans, you know, cross group activity I would have is basically, in real life trolling of the Spartans in the ISO.
Wow.
Which is a Spartacist League, an international, socialist organization for those who aren't keeping score. So just like fellow Trotskyist groups, and then, you know, the RCP looking them at them going, ew. But things like that, you know, it was just what it was, you know. And I do remember, it was funny because I always think that when I was at that stage, I mean, ecological radical thought was like the furthest thing from my mind, because this is what, like late 90s, right? So you're older than me, and you were in Berkeley at that stage, right? I assume.
Yes.
You've been in the Bay Area for a number of years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I remember once there was that at the Campanile, in the middle of campus, I was in my Spanish class, and some guy hung a banner. This must have been in 1998 from the Campanile, and he was just suspended, like, I don't know how many couple hundred feet above ground, or however tall that is. And he had a banner that said, "And animal vivisection." You know, I was just hanging there for like 2 or 3 days. And I just sort of rolled my eyes at it. You know, I always thought that it was, you know, petty bourgeois sentimental activism. You know, I was a good Bolshevik at that point. So that was sort of my political theory. But I mean, that lasted only a few years. I mean, when I dropped out of Berkeley, I was 20, 21. Hmm. And then I started my that spiritual journey or whatever. That was sort of my biography there.
And
I don't know.
And so then you had a gap between that time and when you became interested in eco-extremism. And so so I guess continue to talk about the evolution of the ITS phenomena through from the time it became Wild Reaction.
Right. Well, I mean, what the big thing was is that they started out being, if they weren't anarchists, they were anarchist friendly. That was another thing of Scott Campbell's article that was sort of like a half truth. Like they had anarchists in them, and they gave shout outs, you know, the typical shout outs to the anarchist prisoners, so on and so forth. And then about the Sixth Communicator, like, now we're not doing that anymore. And, you know, and they started saying, we're not going to use a politically correct language. We're just going to, we just don't think the left is worth dealing with, which is really sort of Kaczynski's position anyway.
Yes.
So I guess they just sort of became more consistent Kaczynskiite at that point. but the one thing that they've never, that was one of the inaccuracies in the article, the one thing they've never actually, you know, the one thing they've never advocated is revolution. So that's the big thing about, you know, industrial society in its future. You know, the whole anti-tech revolution, they were like, no, that's not going to, you know, that's not going to fly. We don't believe in that. And it was funny because in the initial communiques, they were like, well, you know, we know this is Kaczynski's position, but he's been in jail for a number of years. So if he were out right now, he would see that revolution isn't possible. You know, you can't, you know, create a mass movement to destroy technology. Like, that's just not possible. So that, and the whole, like, indiscriminate attack, that's been there since day one. That's been, you know, more or less, I mean, not in the sense maybe that they've been doing it now, but in the sense of, like, if we send a bomb and, you know, it blows up the, you know, blows the secretary's face off or something like that instead of the person it was intended to, oh, well, that's just, you know, that's just how we're going to do it. That's just how it is. So those are sort of the early ITS was sort of like that. It was just very much finding its way, you know, very scientific, very rational. Like I said, when the early communiques go on and on about nanotechnology and how bad it is and so on and so forth. So that's another sort of thing that's the difference between then and now. I mean, they really are very different ideologies within the space of 2011, but within 6 years. Like, they've gone much more nihilistic, much more spiritualistic, if you will, very explicitly pagan. Although that's interesting because there are certain people who hit those notes more than others. Because I don't know if you wanted to go into that or you wanted
that's great.
In a chronological. So one of the things about the 29th communique is if you, because people just read, oh my God, they kill people. But I mean, which, you know, of course is, you know, is significant. However, if people saw it, or if people
can we pause for a second? Well, the first thing is you're a little close to the microphone, so you're breaking up quite a bit. I'm not sure if you're holding the microphone, if you can move it just a little
further. Why don't I stand still? Because I'm sort of standing.
Okay.
Let me just sit down.
Okay. And okay. So then continue. You're talking about the 29th communique and what it said, other than that they were taking credit for killing some quote unquote innocents.
Well, is this better?
Yeah.
Is this better? Okay. Let me just sit down. I was sort of gesticulating and doing all this stuff. So, yeah, I'm sort of talking to myself in a way. So the 29th communique was signed by two groups, which was, one was the Individualistas Tendiendo Los Salvajes, the ITS, and then there was a Grupo Indiscriminado Tendiendo Los Salvajes, which is the Individuals what is it that it would be nice to be SRI? The indiscriminate group tending towards the wild. These are two groups. The latter, which is in Spanish would be GITS, which GIT itself kind of repeats, so I don't know how they would say it. It's a particular individual. And he, I guess you could just call him indiscriminate, if you will. And he before it was GIT, he had something called an indiscriminate faction. He's interesting. Basically, he writes in a very colloquial Mexican Spanish. And he has his own sort of thing going, he or them, or I should just clarify right now. I don't know who ITS is. I don't know how many there are. You know, theoretically, or it could be just, it's just a prank, bro. It's possible. I mean, I don't know. I think at this point there's something going on. So I don't know who's who and who's what. I have no idea. I just figure it out from when they issue the communiques and the fact that I know Spanish and the fact that I've read a lot of the same things they have. So with that out of the way,
let's expand on that one more level, which is to your understanding, how much of what they take credit for is there any sort of like external source validating that they actually did what it is they did? In other words, how much of this could be a joke if they were just joking around? 50%?
Well, let me put it to you this way: there hasn't been anything that has come out like that has where people have said, oh, this wasn't them, this was somebody else. And I know in Mexico that's difficult, and that's also referring to Scott Campbell's article. He was like, well, 99% of the crimes in Mexico go unsolved, which is funny since a lot of his anarchist comrades are in jail, so the only people who get caught in Mexico are assassins that the drug cartels give up and anarchists. But anyway, sure. That's an interesting thing. So nobody's been caught. Nobody has ever come out and said, oh, somebody else did this, not them. There's a caveat about that because I know the UNAM worker that worked at the National Autonomous University of Mexico, the head of chemistry department services. People, the police report, one initial report from the attorney general's office said that it was his coworkers that did it. However, those coworkers were never caught. So, I mean, I'm assuming if they were his coworkers, why didn't the police just go to their house and arrest them? So, you go to the Mexican media now, right now, not that the Mexican media is dependable at all, but they're saying, yeah, it hasn't been solved yet. So who knows who, I mean, somebody could have said something. So a lot of this is veiled in the fact that, we just don't know. I mean, however, the other thing is the only people who seem to be saying anything about it is ITS. So, I mean, they killed a rector, a vice rector of a prominent Mexican technical university in the north. They shot him when he was going out of mass. He was going to church, and they shot him coming out of church. I mean, have they caught anybody in regards to that? And you can just say, oh, well, the Mexican police are incompetent. Okay, they're incompetent. But unless you can say, at this point, they've been in the national news enough that if they got caught or they said, oh, this isn't them, they would just, somebody would just come out and say it, and nobody said it.
Right.
I mean, a lot of this stuff is really strange. Like when they killed the two hikers, also the 29th communique, they left their backpacks. Why would they leave their backpack? Because they weren't robbing them. Hmm. It's just very strange things. The other big significant thing that is underplayed in the United States is when they sent the package bomb to Oscar Landereche, who was the head of the Codelco, which is the Chilean mining company, which is one of the largest mining companies in the world. And they sent the ITS group, and one of the ITS groups in Chile sent a package bomb to his house, and it blew up at nearly, and the only reason that he wasn't wounded more is because there was some sort of way that just by sheer chance of how he opened it, most of the shrapnel flew away from his face. But it was and that was in the Chilean news for weeks. The president of Chile commented on it. The person in the Supreme Court, one of the, I think it was the president of the Chilean Supreme Court, said this may change, you know, Chilean jurisprudence concerning terrorism from here on out. Nobody solved it. You know, it's the exact same bomb that ITF has used other places. Nobody solved it. You know, it's just like, oh, well, they're just out and about. You know? But I'll give you a reason why they probably don't get caught. And this is just from, this is actually, if you do read Atasa, there's an article called Surviving Civilization, the Lessons from the Double Lives of Eco Extremists, which if you do a little bit of digging, was actually based on a work, a similar work that ISIS put out, actually. And basically the thing is, they're like, avoid anarchist squats, avoid the scene, dress like a normal person, act like a normal person, don't tell anybody what you're doing, and just various things, and like be aware of how you dress and what you do, and just be normal, just live like a normal life. But when it comes time to do it, you know, you do it. And one of the things they say about that is like, yeah, don't go to anarchist scenes because they're crawling with cops and reporters.
Sure.
So you see how that works, you know, because anarchists supposedly want to influence the people, and they want to, you know, influence the scene, and they have all the infighting, and, you know, they have all the moles and the snitches and, you know, the people who rat them out, and that's why they end up in prison. And ITS just doesn't do that. ITS is basically like a secret cabal. So they don't, nobody knows who they are.
This isn't similar to ISIS. Both of them are similar to Nechev.
Yeah, well, I see, that's where my history's deficient. But yeah, so I've heard. So,
anyways,
but no, explicitly though, that particular article is based on that. Like, I've actually read.
Yeah, but that argument, you know, that argumentation is almost verbatim from Nechev's Catechism of the Revolutionary.
Okay, well, I have reading to do then, I guess. Okay. We might have something about that in the next Atasa. I don't know. Knock on wood. We'll see. You know, if we do get it, and the anarchists don't lynch you or something like that.
Right.
if we do get to that point. But, so where were we at? I was on GIFs, right?
Well,
so
actually,
it's just,
why don't we talk about
something else?
Yeah, why don't we talk about how did RS fall apart, in your understanding, and sort of return to ITS, and so talk a little bit about that journey from there to Communique 29.
I don't know, actually, what happened. So what happened in August 2014, they put, so Reaction Salvaje, Wild Reaction, put out the first communique and saying they were like a group of violists and criminals and politically incorrect people, and then they did things like, you know, like fire on various, you know, various construction sites, and then there was the infamous bombing at the Mexican Telethon, and then, you know, things like that. And then it was only after a year that they disbanded. And it's kind of mysterious. No, I have no idea. I have no idea what happened. Okay, so I'll give my gut feeling about this, and I mean, I could be wrong, and they're probably going to listen, they're probably going to whatever. You know, I think there's a lot of, what's it called when you, the term's escaping me, but of course, I think there are more groups than groupsicles and possible members. I think people move around a lot. I think some groups are only just one person. I do think that there's enough of, so, because the Acción Salvaje supposedly had all these groups, you know, all over central Mexico and stuff like that. And I'm just like, maybe that's what it is. I just, the number of groups that they claim to have and the logistics of keeping that under wraps is kind of hard. It's kind of hard to swallow sometimes. I'll put it like that. Are you following me, sort of?
Not really.
But I think, I'm sorry. If I could back up, I think the groups are just like the group names just represent an ever shifting number of individuals.
I do think that year where RS was sort of the way in which these were being talked about, ITS did not issue any communiques during that year, and then after that year they started issuing their own communiques again.
So you want to know about that? No, that's just really so what happened was, ITS evolved and became Wild Reaction. So that's what happened if you're keeping score. Hmm. And then after a year, they just disbanded and became nothing. Between August 2015 and January 2016, there were various groups, there was the eco-extremist group of terror and something else, and then there was the famous pagan sect of the mountain and stuff. So they were still around, but they were sort of trying to reform. My idea of why ITS reformed was because it went international. That's what happened. There's evidence that during the stage of RS, they were in talks with people in Chile, for example, and Argentina. So that's why I think ITS became sort of reformed. So, Reacción Salvaje was very much a Mexican, kind of very much a Mexican feel to it, because I mean, they were all named they all had like indigenous names, like they were named in Nahuatl, which is the Mexica, the Aztec language, if you will, like there was a Consejo de Huehuatoli and things like that. So they all had, so I mean, if I were to guess, maybe there were like legitimate differences between each other. I mean, I know like the guy who was referring to, the Gitz guy, the indiscriminate guy, like he's always been sort of his own thing. I mean, for example, last year he claimed, or he or she or it or they claimed to have assassinated a computer engineering student, actually, a computer science student. He was like in the middle of the street, and it was one of those, and in the communique he issued, he said something, or this person, or these people issued, they said something like, oh, don't worry, at least he put up a fight.
Yeah, I read that communique. I was pretty tell his family he put up a fight.
Yeah, and it's always, that person has always been, that particular group has always been like that. And, in the communique, the 29th communique, I'm sorry if I'm jumping around all over the place, there's actually a possibility that we don't believe in coyotes or spirits or anything. We're just here to kill people because we don't like what they're doing to the environment, and that's it. So he, all the spiritual stuff about Chico Mostoc and, the spirits and the gods and whatever, he's like, nah, I don't believe in that. I'm sort of the famous sign, I'm just here for the violence.
Right.
So he, you could sort of have a gallows humor about it, but yeah, so that's a very particular person. So yeah, within our Reacción Salvaje, there probably were tensions, but I have no idea why they disbanded. But I think a lot of it had to do with the ITS was going to be the signs, the initials under which they would go international.
Okay,
basically.
So let's shift gears, because so far what we've mostly allowed you to do is sort of rant and rave about the who's, where's, and how's of ITS directly. From a North American audience, the thing that I think has been very notable the past 2 weeks has been that a lot of people, a lot of our friends, a lot of anarchists, all of a sudden are extremely nervous about ITS because the consequence of ITS being a bunch of murdering Mexicans has dawned on them, especially because of this critical article. What do you think of this sort of moralistic hand-wringing? Do you think that there's some solid points there? And what did you think of Scott Campbell's points that it's racist to pay attention to ITS or to give them any ink?
Well, I'm Mexican. I mean, I grew up. my mom's from Mexico. I mean, I visited Mexico when I was growing up. I grew up speaking Spanish. I mean,
but you can be a racist. You can be a racist Mexican.
Whatever. Anyway, let me back up. So the question was. Exactly. What do I think? I just don't think people have been paying attention. You know, I think I have a Facebook page for Atasana. Unfortunately, you know, I try to troll too much for my own good. But I think it's like ITS is one of the only groups that says what it's going to do and then does it.
Right.
So all of these sites for Contra Info and 325 No State and all these other people who were so excited to release the first ITS communiques from 2016 of last year, obviously did not read them.
Right.
You know, I know this is people are going to be horrified by that or whatever, but it's like, when have they said they're not going to do exactly what they're doing? No, I mean, you could go back to 2011. They were basically, this wouldn't be far from where it is. And I know that, you know, to their credit, there have always been social anarchists and even insurrectionary anarchists who have been very critical of the extremism. But I mean, I guess people put it out at first because it was clickbait, you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, for the edgy people or whatever. And everybody says I'm edgy, but, you know, whatever. I mean, we can revisit that point later. But I don't think people have been paying attention. I mean, where were they when you know, in 2011, they wrote up this guy, you know, some poor scientist, you know, who was riding on a motorcycle and shot him in the head. I mean, where were they when they stabbed the guy last year, you know, in UNAM? Where were they when they stabbed that computer science student? Where were they when Landeriche, when Landeriche's daughter, he had a 3-year-old daughter next to the bomb, that, you know, he could have potentially been, like, blinded by it or something. But, you know, what it really is just, like, they got triggered by the fact that it was a woman, first of all. Uh-huh. And second of all, you know, before, you know, ITS really released a communique, there were all those marches at the UNAM, so at the university in Mexico of women, you know, reclaiming, you know, just as if it was, you know, within the continuity of the feminicide that have occurred in places like Ciudad Juarez and places like that. And, you know, it hit too close to home for them, I think. And whereas before, just ago, you know, because they got so, you know, the left in Mexico got so upset over it. And then the ITS comes out and says, oh, yeah, we did that. You know, that's what it is. And it's not like they don't have precedent. I mean, they have attacked the UNAM several times, not just even, you know, the stabbing from last year. I think that I heard a rumor. I don't know if it was in the communique or something. I think it was insinuated that even that it might have been the GIT guy, the indiscriminate guy, who put like a bomb outside of like the anarchist or whatever, the auditorium that wherever the leftists gather there is like Che Guevara or something like that, auditorium or something. Like they put a bomb outside of it. Like they're just like, it's not like, oh, this comes out of the blue. You know, they see somebody wandering in front, you know, walking in front of the engineering building, and they do what they've always done. You know, it's like, so I don't, I'm sorry, I sort of lost my train of thought, but what we were getting at, okay, so why was that reaction? I guess that's it. I mean, it's not a rational way. I mean, people aren't paying attention. It's not on their radar. So,
well,
you know,
the other way to go about this is that the ITS doesn't have a rational revolutionary program, and so it's taken a while for people to reconcile the fact that their not rational program is actually a program of, you know, again, not spontaneous violence, but it's sort of a violence first program, and that is not anarchist.
Yeah, I mean, but that we could get into a whole discussion of you know, why are you so obsessed with this label? Kind of thing, like why are you so obsessed with being a Presbyterian? I mean, is there something more to Presbyterianism than just having a label? I'm not gonna discuss, you know, who's anarchist, who's not anarchist. I mean, that's not something that's interesting to me. So I'm not gonna get into that. But it's just one of those things that you had admitted this stuff into your milieu, and then you pull it back for why? It's not clear to me why. You know, at this point, it's sort of not clear to me, you know, other than, you know, well, I mean, the whole thing about Scott Campbell, I don't know if you wanted to talk about that explicitly, but the whole thing about calling it eco-fascism, you know, for me, that's just sort of like, that's the flavor of the month because of the whole Trump thing and the Black Bloc and stuff. So he's just going to sort of, you know, a spinoff of it. It's a spinoff because it has no, do you even know what fascism is? I mean, I don't think of people who they block, you know, they mask up against are fascists. I mean, not really.
Have you studied Scott's CV? Because I think he has pretty deep ties in some of the social anarchism of Mexico City. So, for instance, I think he might have some connections to the whatever the bombing was that happened there.
Yeah, I mean, I listened to his It's Going Down podcast that he did with the Mexican anarchist prisoners, which I sort of cited in my trolling piece, you know, the IGV PSA public service announcement. I mean, I saw that. I had, but yeah, no, I know. I know his type. I went to Berkeley. I know what he's like. I know his type, you know.
Yeah, I believe I've actually run into him in person a couple different times, and he's almost like a walking billboard of the sensitive North American gringo who, you know, speaks Spanish at any opportunity and, you know, says Chile and like literally has a cafia on alongside a poncho. If he is who I think he is, we actually saw him get dropped off at the book fair in Orange County by his mom in a Prius. It was sort of amusing.
Well, I mean, I was reminded of when I was at Berkeley my first time around. I was in all of these Latin American classes, studies programs. There was a tall white guy in glasses. He was sort of like hipster up on La Maître. And he had a shoulder bag with a prominent UFW button on it, which is United Farm Workers, which is really ironic since I actually come from a family of farm workers. And when I was a kid, I actually marched with C.F. Chavez. But you wouldn't see me wearing a button of that. It's just, I mean, it's just, okay, so I don't know if you want me to address the whole racism thing. I mean, that,
give a real response to that.
No, when I see stuff like that, that just reminds me of that sort of virtue singling. I mean, first of all, from this side of the border, I mean, things can be more, you know, we can feel we can be more, there's this distorted radicalism to it, you know, it's the world is Maoism. That's all it is, really.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
You know, because they're poor and oppressed, they have some sort of, they're sort of these sainted people. And all of their causes are sainted causes. Where you go to people like ITS, and not even ITS, just everybody in general, they're just like, I mean, that's their reality. They don't care. You know, that actually, no. You know what RS said about Mexico? They said it was a steaming pile of shit. That's what they said. Like, they don't. It's like this politics. You think that if we develop, you know, if we fight imperialism, that's going to sort of magically, you know, save us from whatever evils there are? No. I mean, all of these things of, you know, citing things like colonialism and imperialism, that's just 1960s Maoist propaganda. I mean, that's not even how the world works now. You know, Mexico so far from God, so close to the United States. The ice caps are melting, the oceans are dying, and you're on that politics still? Like, really?
Right.
You know, I mean, every single leftist movement, like, every single one has fallen apart. Like, just doesn't, I mean, it's a non-issue, it's a non-starter, and you're still on this politics, you know?
Well, but
Where have you been the past 40 years, you know?
There is a large segment of people in North America who still respond to this type of name calling, to this kind of terminology. I mean, you know, it's not out of the blue that he used it. I mean, he's clearly using it to draw a line in the sand and say you're on that side and he's on this side. And I guess, to what extent do you think he's going to be successful at that? And, you know, the real question is to what extent are these ideas attractive to people? What kind of people are they attractive to? What's being referred to when sort of these leftists talk about edgy people. Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, I try to take these arguments seriously on the level of they work for somebody.
I mean, they're not. I mean, I'm sorry that, I mean, we can sort of call the whole Atossa thing, you know, quits tomorrow, because they're not. I mean, they're basically, eco-extremism calls for the extinction of the human race. I mean, they're not. I mean, they're not popular. I mean,
right.
And they're not going to fashion themselves to be popular. You know, it's just not going to happen. And the actual ethos, the paradigm you're working with eco-extremism, is like a totally different paradigm. You have a totally different basis of why you do something, why you think something, why you say something. It's just totally different. It came out of, you know, other leftism and anarchism and anarcho-primitivism and anti-civilization thought, and to some extent anthropology and political thought, but it's not, you know, there really isn't, you know, and there really isn't anything else to say, which is sort of why my approach is just at this point, it's okay, if somebody criticizes us, I'm just going to copy and paste what has actually already been written, because in reality, we don't really have anything to say to these people, kind of thing. And to the extent, I'm a nice person, so I try to, like, relate to people, so I will try to do what I can to be like, oh, you're an anarchist, okay, well, how's that like? Or you're a leftist, and how's that like? But in reality, my core values, and the core values of a lot of people involved in the project, no. I mean, we're doing theology now. We're not doing politics. We're straight doing theology, and it might be a little bit bloody, but that's what we're sort of doing. We're just like, we're thinking in eons and not, you know, 10 years, 20 years, movements, my lifetime. Well, how can I get my liberation now? No, you know, we're not interested in that.
Well, that's actually a different direction to take this conversation, which is to say, because you don't, like, it appears that you do have a social life that's sort of around these topics, and you know, I see the same people sort of talking to you about this stuff most of the time. Does it hurt your feelings, or does it bum you out to sort of be hated by strangers for your interest in a set of ideas and a set of people that other people don't like or whatever in the fuck?
No, because they don't matter. I mean, I know, Aragorn, I love you, and I know you live in Berkeley, and I know you love it, but Berkeley is not the rest of the world. Neither is Brooklyn, neither is even, you know, the Bywater in New Orleans, which also has an anarchist group who I've never met. You know, I've never, or whatever. I mean, I've never, no, it doesn't matter. Anarchism's failed. Leftism has failed. Progressivism has failed. Why fight people who have been defeated? You know, they don't matter anymore. So why bother? I mean, to an extent, humanity doesn't sort of matter either, but, I mean, at least humanity. You know what I'm reading right now? You want to know what I'm reading right now? Catholic philosophy and theology. Because the Catholic Church has 1 billion people in it. You know, I could have, knowing Catholic theology, I could have more conversations with more interesting people than I would reading Kropotkin or Bakunin or whatever, or, you know, what is it? Or any of the other anarchists. No, I mean, you're a niche of a niche of a niche. So, I mean, why, so, I mean, you're probably going to be like, okay, well, we're done, you know, bye. But at the same time, okay, you've given me this opportunity to do a journal around something that's very interesting, so I'm going to do it. And, you know, I don't know if what you think of the contents of Atossa and how much you've actually addressed it, but it doesn't have, I mean, I guess I started out my article, one of my major articles with Marx, you know, dealing with Karl Marx and, you know, the citation from the 18th Brumaire. And when you look at something like Ramon Ulani's piece or whatever, I mean, this doesn't have anything to do with politics. You know, he's citing Guarani theology, you know, what is it, Yanomami theology about, you know, the spirits carrying you know, tearing down the cosmos with machete so fast that people don't have time to scream, you know. And even eco-extremist action, they'll be like, we're apolitical. We are not political. This is not a sure. political thing. This is,
sure.
And that's why it's sort of individualist and all those other things. So, no, but it doesn't bother me because people hate me. You know, who are they?
You know? I guess you're... You're answering a question, but you're also making huge assumptions, and it's one of the reasons why I asked you about your anarchist pedigree.
Right.
Because the kind of anarchism that I represent, for lack of better language, has always not been the same type of anarchism that pays attention to Trotskyists or to what you would call politics. In other words, right. the kind of anarchism that I'm involved with would broadly be called an anti-political anarchism. So a lot of the sort of attitude that you have is about something different, or like, in other words, I'm playing a type of devil's advocate because I want to take as much, like, when people have energy about something, that to me is a little blinker of light, you know, and I crave light, and
right.
so when someone hates a project that we're working on, whether it's a TASA or another Little Black Card project, for me, the goal of that is to be like, okay, like, in my life, like, I play around with ideas, I use ideas, I try to grow and change and learn from ideas, and I'm totally a whore. Like, I'm happy for those ideas to be ones I disagree with, or ones that perhaps sting or that burn. And so for me, the conversation around ITASA, like, why I've been so excited about ITS has been because I call them a post-anarchist challenge to anarchism. And part mm-hmm. of that challenge is a challenge that's a political challenge, but there's other challenges in there too. Like, one of the other challenges is most anarchists they can just portray their politics in these very safe ways. And ITS points to, this is what it looks like to do your politics in a less safe way. Now, of mm-hmm. course, the social anarchists, like, if they were right, And that if we could get a large enough crowd, and if we could rally large enough, then we could change the world. That's an even more exciting and dangerous transformation. But I you know, firmly believe, and I think that ITS agrees with me, is that what they're doing is impossible. Right. Mm-hmm. In other words, that there is no, like, they could make it the biggest rally in the world, and it's not going to be enough to change bullshit. Right. Because change doesn't happen that way. Mm-hmm. And we don't live in France in, you know, 1798 or whatever in the fuck. And so for me, ITS is interesting because it feels like it grasps something very 21st century, which is that violence is almost a universal solvent, and it's playing out what the consequences of that sort of theory is. But that said, of course, I mean, it makes perfect sense that a social anarchist position is going to say, well, that's unacceptable, because social anarchism says that you have to do anarchism all the way down. And of course, that's not how society has changed. That's not how revolution happens, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's more sort of the question that I'm getting at, is like, to what extent, like, unless a quote unquote apocalypse happens in the foreseeable future, we're probably going to have to live with politics as we see it on television for the rest of our natural lives. And so right. in that context, what does ITS versus social anarchism look like? Because I think that in that context, it's kind of interesting. There's something interesting happening.
Well, what it is and I wrote, you know, I wrote something called José Vivo's War, on this, and it was like a short discourse in the extremist method, sort of ripping off of the Descartes title. And what it really is that if you're going to do the type of things that the anarchists used to do now, I mean, if you're going to do that stuff, you know, the bomb throwing and stuff like that, you're going to have to use ITS's modus operandi at this point. It's right. not going to be like, we're going to sit in the squat and we're going to have a struggle session. We're going to talk and talk and talk about it. No, it's going to be like, it's going to come out of the blue. It's going to come out of nowhere. And the next day, the people are going to be on the news like, oh, well, he was always so quiet. And, you know, he always said hi. And, you yep. know, he, yep. I saw him mowing his lawn. Who would have known he would have done that? You know,
no, that's actually, yeah.
And that horrifies the social anarchists. It horrifies the leftists. That horrifies them. They and that's why they say, oh, they're just a bunch of serial killers, which they don't disagree with. But I mean, the intentions are, if they have a political-ish intention behind that, and that's how you're going to have to do it. It's not an issue of, I mean, it's just, you know, as capitalism develops, as the machinery of techno-industrial society develops, you know, the means for resistance of having been what they are have improved the means for repression, the means right. for control. And what lashing out against that, or I'm not going to even use the term resistance, what any sort of opposition to that is going to look like, it's going to look extreme, much more chaotic. It's going to look much more individualistic. It's going to look much more
antisocial.
Right. Yeah, antisocial. It's gonna be, you know, severely, you know, disproportionate to what, you know, people think should be the action and so on and so forth. It's just not going to be controlled anymore. And that's, you know, RTS is always like, we're on the side of chaos, you right. know, and that horrifies people. People still think it's still 1936 in Spain. You know, they still think, you know, and that's sort of when you know, people like Scott Campbell say, oh, you know, ITS are eco-fascists, they're eco-fascists. They think, he's thinking he's a CNT, you know. You know? And it's like, this isn't, this, you know, this is 2017. Wake up. This is not this time. Look at even how ISIS does it in Europe. I mean, they, you know, commandeers a car and drives it over people. You know?
Well, and for me, this is actually... Like, we're kind of talking about the pieces. For me, this is a little bit more about the board, which is to say that if there were a CNT that were, in point of fact, large and healthy and doing things of consequence, then I would say, Scott Campbell, I wish that you would spend your time building and working, you know, in your zone rather than spending time focusing on a zone that's not yours at all. Because it really feels like to me that the social anarchist perspective has very little to point to say, you know, we're doing great, good news. And so instead, this is sort of where the energy is spent. And it feels very strongly to me like, you know, of course, nobody believes, including ITS, that ITS is sort of the way forward for a movement for social change. And so you're basically criticizing them for something that they don't say that they are, or that they're not even trying to achieve. And so the real question, and I ask this question a lot, is, yeah, are we just talking past each other? Why are we actually, you know, why are we engaging with each other? Because in this case, we're really talking very different zones, and the only real reason that we're talking to each other is basically, you call it virtue signaling, but it's sort of like, you know, it's like a mob rules justice sort of a motivation. And obviously, you're not that impacted by that because you're not in the social milieu of anarchism, but of course, I am quite impacted by it because I am.
Solidarity, brother, that's what I have to say. But, no, I guess what I would say, and I don't know if this touches on the point or not, and I went back, going back to the point where I said, well, you know, why are you so obsessed with labels like anarchist, like Presbyterian, whatever? I'll back up and say, when I see things like anarchism, even though admittedly maybe I don't know enough to comment, you know, on every single detail, or Marxism or stuff. I don't see it as, and this is just my own particular philosophical and ideological formation, I don't see it as some sort of enclosed school of thought that's, you know, encased in amber and has these very definitive lines separating it from, you know, previous ideologies or from the history of thought, human thought itself. I mean, if you want to go into anarchism, I mean, there's a really interesting book called Marching the Bible by a Mexican exegete named Jose Porfirio Miranda. And he said that St. Paul, the person who wrote most of the New Testament, was actually the first anarchist. I mean, he said that there are passages in St. Paul about the law that would put Kropotkin and Bakunin to shame. And, you know, that might be a bit exaggerating, but that's right. And then we could go to Lao Tzu, and then we could go to Diogenes and stuff like that. So the questions between anarchism and Marxism and all these things, these are going back to thousands of years. This isn't just like, you know, you're not part of my treehouse, so I'm kicking you out. It's like, no, your treehouse is part of a larger legacy of Western thought and global thought that even if you don't know it, you're basically dealing with it. If you don't know, you know, I think it was a Mortimer Adler quote of all philosophy being footnotes to Plato. You know, even though you think that you're coming up with this very special position, you're basically being haunted by ghosts, you know, these phantoms of ideological ancestry, you know, and if you don't deal with those, you're just sort of repeating yourself over and over, maybe with slight variations, but it's just, you know, you're just sort of revisiting the same things over and over again, and you don't know why, you know. So I don't know. When people say, "Oh, well, you're not an anarchist. You don't know anything about anarchy." I mean, I'm not an anarchist. I'm not interested in the Presbyterian Church. Thank you. But at the same time, it's like, but you know, that whole thing about Calvin's series of predestination and the five solas. Yeah, I mean, that's something that's interesting. You know those points of doctrine. Yes, because those come from somewhere. The theoretical foundations of that come from somewhere, and that's what I could comment on explicitly. You know, whether or not, you know, that conforms to your clubhouse rules, that's up to you. If you don't want to listen to me, fine. You know, God knows there's enough other outlets for you to, you know, to maintain your attention.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much you pay attention to some of the projects I'm involved with, but this is basically exactly the conflict that happened between John Zerzan, Kevin Tucker, and Blackseed, which is mm-hmm. one of the projects I'm involved in. Have you seen any of the issues of Blackseed?
Okay, no, actually, I haven't, Corn. Sorry. I think you may have sent one to me, and I put it somewhere. No, the whole nihilism thing, that's one of the it was so funny because I have read Black and Green Review, don't hurt me, but I have read all of them. And there was this very cute essay about nihilism, about negative theology in there. And it was just so like freshman English, like paper style, like cited Wikipedia, like tried to cite what negative theology was. I'm like, oh my God, that's so cute, because I mean, theology is one of the things that I actually know about. But, you know, the whole idea of negation and you can only know who God is by what he's not. And, sure. and that sort of thing that, you know, and what does it mean? What does that mean for thought after that? So I don't know. I don't know, but if that's one of the theories of the whole, because I know, I mean, I do listen to John Zerzan's show because, you know, I'm bored and whatever, and I do listen to it. And I know he's just like, everything other episode is just a new excommunication of the nihilist, you know, over and over and over again, that to the point that I'm just wondering who he's trying to convince at this point. I just don't know who's trying to. It's like, I wrote a whole short blog entry about how I did a whole talk or something about how I don't really feel like I'm a nihilist, but I sort of acknowledge that I am. If only it's because it's a tool. But I'm rambling. I don't know what point you wanted to make on that.
Yeah. Well, it's fine. Actually, why don't we wrap this up for now? I think maybe we could do another episode where we just talk about nihilism.
Okay. Yeah. I have to see where I'm at. at that point, but yeah, we can stop. I don't know how long we've been talking. Hopefully that made some sense.
Yeah, indeed. Thank you very much.
Okay, you have a good night.